Hey everyone, welcome to another awesome, amazing, super special podcast today that you're not going to want to miss. I'm Melanie Johnson, one of the founders of Elite Online Publishing, and I'm here with Jen, my other co-founder. Hey Jen.
Hey everyone, how's your day going today?
Awesome. Jen Foster and I have been doing this podcast for a while, and today I'm really excited.
A while, seven, yeah. 8 years now.
I know, I think we've like over 500 episodes. It's crazy. So anyways, you know, I was a communications major back at Michigan State University where I graduated, and communications is so important. It's important on a personal level, relationship, personal relationships. And it also is super important in the corporate world, whether it's within the office, with other people, with other departments, one branch knowing what the other branch is doing. But there's this whole other layer that I've become aware of recently is your emotional intelligence. And it's so important, and it's really been rearing its head up with our youth today, with adults, with anxiety, depression. All this kind of ties in together. So we have Bill Sturley with us today. He is the author of the book, The Emotional Sobriety Solution. So if you know someone who is, you know, having anything to do with emotion, anxiety, depression, and wanting to be a better communicator, guess what? You are in the right place today. So Bill, thanks for joining us.
Gosh, I am so excited to be here, be able to provide some really wonderful nuggets of information, things that really help in real time that have made such a significant support to me in my life, but also to the clients that I see privately or the groups that I speak to. When I flew to Flint, Michigan during the water crisis, they hired me to come in to deal with emotional challenges that were showing up at a citywide level. Mm-hmm. You know, when the water crisis took place. So if I'm going to train that group of people to be able to reduce the conflict or reduce the emotion in the room, I also want to give the tools to the people that are really trying to provide the support as that kind of terrible thing happened. So we're going to have some fun today, whether it's a personal conversation or a company conversation. These tools really work. And it's a little surprising after all these years. Oh my gosh, they really work. So I am ready to, you know, roll up our sleeves to figure out how we can make our life wonderful. So
awesome.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about your background, how you got into emotional intelligence. Let's start there.
Boy, it's a great question. Three primary questions have run my career. I did not plan to be here. So I started in neurobiology, why people taught anatomy and physiology in high school and college. But the main thing is, as I was doing that, this darn question kept showing up. Why do people think the way they do? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different thinking tools out there. And it's important to know a person's thinking, the difference between a surgeon and, let's say, a social worker or a entrepreneur and an administrator. It's important to know that those are very different vocabularies. Mm-hmm. And in studying that, it led me to a second question. Why do people behave the way they do? Because a person's thinking and behaving don't necessarily line up. And that brought me into the emotional intelligence world, which has to do with running into an international mediator that would fly to war-torn countries and teach them a communication tool so people would stop killing each other. Now, all three of us know the world has a bit of violence going on right now and has a little bit of conflict. In fact, people even have a hard time talking to each other and working through different points of view. Mm-hmm. You know, and so this book is really timely because all of a sudden it's like, well, what would I say when somebody says this? What do I do or say when somebody says or does that?
Well, you know, you were saying everybody's brains are so different, right? Mm-hmm. So they're coming from a certain point of view, depending how their brain works, whether they're more an artist or they're more an intellectual. So it's knowing how to communicate to knowing who your audience is too. sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm so glad you made that bridge as quickly as you did, because if an artist is really focusing on those designs and that open mindset and being conceptual, and that's the style of thinking they're doing, and the intellectual is focusing on trying to get facts or rationale or logic to be in place, both of those two people are motivated by two different things. So in the book, I started drawing the lines between those things. So if my intellectual is looking for rational thinking or fact-based thinking, then they're pursuing the need for clarity or the need for recognition, or they're pursuing the need for accuracy, and that's the motive. Whereas the artist is pursuing the need for creativity or pursuing the need for choice. You see, those are different things. Or pursuing the need for freedom or the need for expression, which the fact person's going like, what are those things? They're not even on my radar screen over here. And the artist is going like, yeah, that's really great over there, but that's not going to help me necessarily with my sculpture, because I'm trying to work through this sculpture creative piece and I'm just trying to make it match here and work around the curve. And so these two different mindsets are here, but the emotional intelligence is, how does a person in any given time meet a certain need of theirs that is affecting their emotions?
Yeah. You know, that reminds me. So I have a friend who has a really high IQ, the intellectual intelligence, but a really low EQ, emotional intelligence. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I have the wonderful gift for you. Okay. The wonderful gift is, it's vocabulary building. EQ actually has to do with vocabulary building, whereas IQ has to do with a different type of vocabulary building. So rational, analytical, fact-based, logical thinking is on that IQ scale. Mm-hmm. And on the EQ scale, those are very different views. It's, how do I expand my feeling words and connect to what they are in my body? How do I check to what the need is that's causing that feeling and build that vocabulary? So if we take somebody that's a very high IQ person and they're focusing on research, their ability to pick up a interpersonal or a subtle cue of a facial expression, it's not necessarily registering because they don't have the vocabulary to go through. So if I'm on this call and I'm looking at either of you smiling, I might, from an EQ stance, say the following sentence: could you be feeling delighted because your need for learning is met? Mm-hmm. I got two head nods. So that's called a empathetic landing. I name the feeling, delighted, guess the need, learning, and said, is that correct? And all of you go, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's it. Now, if any of us did not have a good night of sleep, then it might be, could you be feeling tired and you need some rest? Mm-hmm. So there's a feeling word, again, vocabulary building, and then a need word, which is rest. Tired is the feeling, rest is the need. And in conflict, and in my book, I wrote about, put these words next to these other words, build this vocabulary list in doing that. In fact, in the front of the book, I have a QR code that people can download a list of feeling words and need words. Pick your top 20 words of needs, and then find the feeling that goes with it when it's being met. So if I'm working with a couple in relationship, it might say this. I might say to one of their partners, could you be feeling lonely because you're needing more connection? Mm-hmm. They go, yeah, I've been trying to talk about it for years. great, what would connection look like? Because sometimes connection looks like it's only this little small thing I need.
Yeah.
Whereas the other person say, oh my gosh, you want me to stay with you for how many hours? It's like, no, it's like this little thing. It's like, this is enough of a meal. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have to be in your space for 12 hours. That's not the level of connection I need. But this part I do.
Mm-hmm.
So lonely is being caused by connection. But when our need for connection is being met, we might feel relieved or energized or excited because we're getting the quality of connection we would like. Feelings are like a toggle switch on and off based on whether a need is being met or not being met. Now, this next sentence I say is going to be really unsettling, and it's going to cause the two of your brains to go, oh my gosh. So I'm going to put a little anticipation in this, is that human behavior is actually pretty simple. It could be summarized into one sentence. Now look at, you're going like, now notice the curiosity feeling is showing up. The doubt and skepticism might be showing up. Your need for truth and trust might end up being met. What kind of BS is this guy talking about? One sentence, are you kidding me? It's like, so that's doubt and skepticism. All right, those are good emotions. I like those emotions. They tell us we need some truth and trust. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's see if I could get some truth. Okay. So if it could be summarized into one sentence, then it might sound like this. No human being does anything unless a need of theirs is either being met by what they're doing or not being met by what they're doing. So if the three of us don't want to go out on a Friday night, we might be meeting our need for solitude by staying home at the expense of our need for adventure by going out.
Do you think, based on that sentence, why some people turn to things that are unhealthy for them or develop an addictive behavior to meet those needs?
Wow, that is a great line that you drew there, because working 4 years in drug and alcohol rehab, like I have in the past, I would sit across a person and say to them, hey, can you tell me the good reason why you're using the substance you're using? They look at me like, good reason. Now I'm trying to stop doing that. I'm like, that's not helping us much.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's when the addiction piece comes into play. There's two different kinds. One has to do with the substance, and then one has to do with the medicating of emotions. Those mm-hmm. are different. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a coping mechanism.
That's right. It's providing support for the person to manage their escalating emotion that's happening in your body. Mm-hmm. So if a person in a trauma space would come in and say, Bill, I feel depressed.
Mm-hmm.
I might start the sentence just to stir the pot by saying the sentence, that's wonderful. Thanks for telling me that you feel depressed. And they look at me and go like, wonderful. I don't think it is. And I would look at him and say, listen, you just told me where to start. Depression, most of the time people don't know that it comes from about 15 needs not being met.
Mm.
Overwhelmed comes from 10 needs not being met. Furious comes from 7 needs not being met. Panic comes from 5 needs not being met. You see how it's starting to lighten up between mm-hmm. of us?
Mm-hmm.
Confused comes from 4 needs not being met.
Mm-hmm.
Torn comes from 2 needs not being met.
Mm-hmm.
Frustration or irritation comes from 1 need not being met.
Mm-hmm.
So our emotions are only indicators. There's not such a thing as a good emotion and a bad emotion. There's no such a thing as a positive emotion or a negative emotion. There's
mm-hmm.
That's not a real thing. They're an indicator only. for the two of you, watch this, gently smile as we go through this little thing. If you're driving in your car and you look at the dashboard and the oil light comes on, tells you something. The oil light's the indicator.
Yeah.
Please tell me, does talking to the oil light work?
Hey, oil light, turn off now.
No, doesn't work. So that's the joke is that's called 8 years of bad therapy. I do not want to talk to the emotion. I don't want to focus on the emotion as much. It's an indicator. It tells me a little bit about where to go. It tells me a little bit about where restoration shows up. Oh, so you're really feeling doubtful about your marriage. Yes. Oh, because you really need some trust? Yes. Well, I'm not going to work on doubt. I'm not going to work on a strategy. I need to find more about why trust is a problem. Because that's the oil that is causing the doubt.
But it's so hard to figure out that it's trust or what that word is or what it is. Like, you're having all these symptoms, you're coping with doing things you shouldn't be doing or making bad decisions, but how do you identify what exactly it is, the emotions that you need? Well, how do you identify those 10 to 15 needs? Because sometimes they can't put words to it. They're like, I don't know. I don't know what I'm trying to fulfill.
No, and it's so important what you just said, because our vocabulary on feelings and needs are so low that we are at a little bit of a disadvantage because, yeah, we've tried to talk about our world through problem solving, but actually in emotional intelligence, we need to talk about our world through what the feeling, what the need is, and empathizing with those two points of view. So I might say to a person that's in the intellectual space that's stuck with low EQ, I might say to the person, so could you be feeling frustrated and you want better understanding about how the emotions work inside the human body? They will say yes. Now I've got to provide facts. Do you know that there's 297 different molecules of emotion in the body? And when they combine together chemically, they create different expressions on a person's face. They'll go, interesting. Do you know that there's vocabulary that goes with those 297 molecules of emotion? Really? Yes. When you see a person kind of squint a little bit, you might ask them, could you be feeling frustrated and do you need me to listen more? The person says, yes. Okay, let me listen and I'll repeat some things back to you. I might not agree with it factually, but at least I'm going to hear you. And the intellectual person says, oh, I actually have a formula to use and understand emotional intelligence. And that's the cool thing that I put in my book, the formula for knowing how much you are in alignment with emotional intelligence, actually how to measure how good you are at it.
I like that.
How do you measure it? Well, if I were to ask somebody, and most people kind of struggle with this one, hey, just list off all the feeling words you have off the top of your head. People start stalling somewhere between 7 and 12 or 7 and 13 words. They got frustrated, mad, angry, overwhelmed, depressed. And then that's like, you know, wait, there's more there. There's like 60, you know, that you could like use. You know, I mean, you don't take irked out for a spin very often or exasperated, but those are two pretty good feelings to use, you know.
Let's shift over to business now a little bit.
Great. So
we kind of hit that group as well. Communicating within a company and how important it is to stay in line, inner communications, and then the communications out to the world. Give us some tips on that.
In customer service and in sales, managing emotions, using emotional intelligence is essential. So if someone's upset, you don't say, what can I do for you? You need to find out what the need or the two needs or the three needs are first. Oh, Mr. Jones, are you feeling frustrated because you really needed to communicate with us because you've been on hold for 40 minutes? Yes. That's called a moment of empathy before you fix their problem.
Most and that can also work with personal relationships. I mean, not just in business. So we're doing a twofer here, everybody.
Twofer here.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then staring down the upset in the sales conversation is, Mr. Jones, it sounds like something's in the way for you moving forward. Listen, are you feeling more hesitant about financial security, or do you just need more reassurance about the product? Could you tell me which one of those two things it is? Mm-hmm. Notice I didn't try to solve on price or try to prove they could trust. I want to know where their upset is coming from first. Mm-hmm. You know, would you be willing to tell me, very powerful sentence, would you be willing to tell me what's in the way of making your decision at this moment? Mm-hmm. The phrase at the moment, time stamps it a little bit. It creates a little bit of urgency because the person has three things that are usually in the way of the decision, mm-hmm. not just one. So you need to extract, it's called a pull narrative instead of a push narrative. Mm-hmm. So a pull narrative is, I'm trying to find the needs that are going to motivate you to make a decision. A push narrative is, here's my features and benefits. Look at all you're going to get. Here's a bunch of stuff that's really going to help you. Boy, you're going to be a great person after you have all this stuff. I'm going to buy. Just see how we just quantified the internet, by the way, very quickly. Yes. It's like, oh my God, no wonder everybody's fragment. But it's like, oh my. So trust becomes a casualty. Mm-hmm. Truth becomes a casualty because of the push narrative. Yeah. The pull narrative is going to restore trust. The pull narrative is going to be able to reestablish truth and create a greater sense of connection because, you know, I might not get everything I want, but at least this person's willing to work with me. Mm-hmm. They might work with me on price. They might do, you know, exchange the wonderful thing they have with the wonderful thing I have. They might do that. I might do a training for a company training for Left. If I say, gosh, you know, I really like fairness and financial security, would you mm-hmm. be willing to give me some stock shares? They go, yeah, sure. You're invested in us. We're invested in you. You betcha. I'm going to increase your sales and I'm going to get you up there and my stock price is going to raise. I think I'm okay with that. I think I'm really good with that. So the way we can collaborate and cooperate with each other becomes easier as we increase our feeling vocabulary and our need vocabulary. Mm-hmm. Each one of the different thinking styles has a different need vocabulary that is in the front of the list. So a surgeon might have a need for respect, or an attorney might have a need for respect. A social worker doesn't necessarily have that on the top of their list. A social worker might have their need for contribution or connection mm-hmm. or service at the top of their list. An artist has a need for creativity, freedom, and support on the top of their list. Mm-hmm. An administrator has the need for order and the need for structure, implementation, and closure. It's a high need for an administrator or a police officer or a factory manager, somebody that is implementing something and doing a set of steps.
So it sounds to me like everyone needs to read the list. Like my whole family needs to read this book and get a list. Our whole team on our company needs to read this list. Because if you understand that vocabulary and have it in your wheelhouse, it's way easier to communicate.
Right. And, you know, go look on Amazon, look at the QR code, download the list, pick your top 20 words, start working the process, find out the relationship between feelings and needs. And as you're doing that, you go like, oh my gosh, how would this work in this situation? And that answer is in the book. Mm-hmm. How would I use this sentence in this other place? That answer is in the book. How do I not hear blame anymore? How do I don't use shame anymore? That's mm-hmm. in the book. How do I deal with criticism or defensiveness? Or how do I deal with withdrawal, somebody not responding to me? How do I deal with somebody that's, you know, bitter and hurt from a relationship problem and contempt? How do I use compassionate and empathetic language?
Yeah.
What the feeling and need is, you know, when somebody calls me a name.
So it's knowing the needs and knowing the vocabulary and really having a lot of empathy on both sides. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And you don't even need the other side. You just got to get good at your own sentence. So if somebody said, Jen, role play with me, say this sentence to me, Bill, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't have a PhD. Watch what happens.
Bill, you don't know what you're talking about because you don't have a PhD.
Okay. Now that vibration is coming towards me and it can hit two places, two different places, and it's going to cause two different feelings. Okay. There's a third option, which I'm going to get to, called not letting the sentence hit me, but we're going to do the first two first. Okay. So as she said the first sentence, if it were to hit my need for respect, it might cause the feeling of anger inside me.
Mm-hmm.
And I might lash back with the following anger sentence. I've been doing this crap for 23 years. I don't need a damn PhD. Just see how anger shows up. Now I'm chuckling just so I could keep my cortisol levels down. Because if I really let my respect button get hit and I really energize adrenaline, cortisol, norepinephrine, acetylcholine, if I get those molecules of emotion, I'm getting fired up. Okay, so far so good. Okay, Jen, say the sentence next and then I'll show you what happens when it hits the next button. Bill, you don't know what you're talking about.
Bill, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't have a PhD.
Okay, it's coming at me. It's coming at me. Now, if it hits my need for truth and it affects my self-worth, yeah, you're probably right. I should have got a PhD. I'm doing helpless and hopeless. I'm getting crushed.
Mm-hmm.
Same sentence. Mm-hmm. How I took it is different.
Right.
How I took it. One more time, Jen, say the sentence and I'm going to catch it this time.
Bill, you don't know what you're talking about. You don't even have a PhD.
The sentence is coming like a bullet and trying to hit me. I reach out and grab the bullet. First I say, wait, then I grab the bullet. Then I would say, oh, Jen, could you be feeling doubtful and you really respect people with a PhD and you need some more reassurance that what I'm saying is true and you need some more trust that it's going to be effective for you.
All right. So what you're saying from earlier is if we master this ourselves,
mm-hmm.
if we have someone in our universe mm-hmm. that has not mastered it, mm-hmm. it can help us help them.
Yes, it can. Because the more you use the language on your side, the more they start mirroring the language back to you and they start integrating it inside themselves. I got three kids. It's crazy what they mirror back to me. I'm going like, you know, I have a 22-year-old with, you know, so I have a 30-year-old, a 22-year-old, and a 17-year-old. And we work through the emotional experience by finding out what the need is. And with my private clients, I practice with them with, oh, they're saying this. What's a good thing to say back? Oh, here's something that, you know, the big things we're challenging. How can we language empathy around that so it doesn't cause us to lock down?
right?
Or, you know, get in an adversarial position, and, you know, because it doesn't need to be that way. Yeah, it's good.
Well, I've learned a lot today. I could go on. Yeah. I wish we didn't have a time crunch. We'd add more time in here. Bill, tell us where people can find you.
Easiest place for people to find me is on my website, which is BillSterle.com, which the last name is spelled STIERLE. And on there, you'll find a link to the book, or you can go to Amazon and just type in The Emotional Sobriety Solution. And even Emotional Sobriety will come up. It was ranked number one in about 7 or 8 different categories in the areas of communication and mental health and addiction, because managing our emotions manages our behaviors, which manages our overreaction and our addictions, because we're using better words to talk about our upsets. So it's a really fun book, and it has a head with 4 different colors on it. I don't know if you can see it. It's kind of disappearing a little bit on my screen, but it's been very well received, and Amazon it's been really good. Yeah, it's good, a fun experience. So that's for sure.
We'll put the links up in the show notes and people can go and grab that and learn more about you and what you're doing with emotional intelligence and how they can help themselves by reading your book.
Yes, with emotional intelligence. Thanks, Bill. And if you're thinking about writing a book yourself, remember to reach out to us at EliteOnlinePublishing.com. We guarantee all our authors will become number one bestsellers. Of course, we're choosy. We don't work with everybody, but hit that author submission button. And everyone have a fantastic week. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, are you looking to increase your revenue, build credibility, and elevate your brand? This podcast is brought to you by Elite Online Publishing, an innovative publishing and full spectrum marketing company. They will publish and market your book to make it a number one bestseller. Becoming an author is the best way to market your business. So contact them at EliteOnlinePublishing.com today. All of their authors become number one bestsellers.